Now, are four main groups of persons interested in photography. First, people who want to become professional photographers. They want to make beautiful pictures and get for it some beautiful money. Second group is people who want to have simply some memories, something which will remind them about past. Some call them button pushers, but this is not true. They are much more than that. Third group are the people who are in love with reality, with everything around them, and they want to put as honestly as they can on paper or film all this reality in all its beauty. And the fourth group is just a bit different. They like reality, but they want to use only part of it. They want to show maybe some kind of hidden pattern. They are pushing away most of reality and they leave only part of it. Or maybe they want to show their own emotions and they use reality as a tool to show deep inside of them. Now I would say, if somebody of you wants to become a professional photographer, my advice is, don't. Reason is quite simple. You may think about getting beautiful pictures and beautiful money, and very few people really do that. But an average professional photographer is a man who sought out quality of pictures for money. If you live in a big city like Chicago, you have to do what your customer wants. If he has a face full of lines and he does not like them, well, you make his face as nice as an egg, completely without lines. And this is a very good money-making business. So, I give you another example. If you want to use a big amount of water, which is necessary to wash correctly your prints, then you will see that your competitor will use about half of this water, and he will have much more money than you do. So what you do? You just cut slowly amount of water needed, you know, just 5 gallons, 10 gallons, 100 gallons less. And then you have beautiful money. But your quality as a photographer, it will be not very high. In big cities at least, the professional photographers could be taught, maybe they don't howl with the wolves, but certainly they oink with the pigs. I'm sorry to say, but this is true for a majority, not for all, by any means. And so in many other countries in Europe, a professional photographer is not considered a full-fledged photographer, second-class citizens of photographic kingdom. And United States is about only country in which a professional photographer is considered a top of this art. Now we come to second group, people who want to preserve memories. This is a very fine group. If they restrain themselves, you have to buy a simple automatic camera. You have to follow, to know and to follow some very simple rules maybe 5 or 7 of them. And that's all. Unfortunately, there is a kind of bacteria going around. Once you begin to push your button, you begin to buy bigger and bigger cameras. You begin to push your nose in affairs of other people. And this is something worse. This is a strange thing. I myself use flashlight strictly when I must, and I never use flashlight for myself. But I'm amazed to see how a person sitting, let's say, among 500 other persons, how this man is so completely insensitive to push button and light his flashlight in complete darkness. Because he is saying, in fact, to other 500 persons, I don't give a damn about you. I want to have my picture, and that's all. I consider it very bad manners. Still, this group did commit much worse things than that. There was a man in Chicago who wanted to commit suicide. He wanted to leap down from about 15th floor of a big high-rise apartment. And there were plenty of photographers around just looking, well, what a beautiful shot. Just let him, expecting him to go down. Well, I consider it quite close to inhuman behavior. And unfortunately, many people from this group do that. So if you just restrain yourself and stay in this group, you will be perfect, ladies and gentlemen. Just don't go too far. Speaking about third group, those who like reality. There was a German painter in late Middle Ages, and one of the big German herzogs, princes, told him to make a portrait of his, well, mistress. This painter did a beautiful portrait. And he told to the prince, I painted her as God made her. I did not change even one hair. And I believe this is a very correct attitude for this group. If you are a true and true honest person, and if you want to take picture of a true reality, you have to know it, and you have always to go with your full honesty to it. Some of people in this group were the best photographers in the world. I will speak later about them. Now the fourth group. Suppose you are in a dark mood, and photography is your tool to express yourself. You can simply take a picture, let's say, of these here tailings in the evening hour. They are almost a complete desert. They are large and wide. And in evening hour, they look exceedingly dark. So you may take the pictures of them if you are in a sad mood. On another side, maybe you are in love with fire. Maybe you like just light falling down on the heads of people, on the bodies of people. There was a great Belgian photographer, Misson, and he told, subject is nothing, light is everything. But if you want to be a member of the fourth group, this is the most difficult job of all. Because you have not only to know the reality, but you have to know how to change it. And this is extremely difficult. So therefore, those four groups. Now we are coming to something else. I was asked here, more than 100 times, What kind of camera do you have? Now suppose there is a painter, and a painter would be asked by everybody, where you buy your beautiful brush and color? Well, I don't know if he would punch you on your nose, because some of them are very angry people, but in my opinion, if he would do that, he would have some very strong mitigating figure. In any court of the law, he should be declared innocent, because he's right. You know, camera is just a tool, nothing else. A tool is a tool is a tool. Now, I see here some younger faces, and it's a very amazing thing to me to see a young revolutionary with long hair who will do nothing according to the rules of society. And now this young man goes to the photography store and he buys exactly the same model of Nikon which a business executive has. For me, this is a kind of stupid behavior. Once he buys his Nikon for, let's say, $400, he proceeds to put as much of his money as he can into a big, black, long, shiny camera. The bigger the better. For about last 10 years, telelenses are in place. Now, I wish only Dr. Sigmund Freud would come back from his grave and see all those lenses. I know what he would say. But of course, I'm not saying that he would be right, not at all. I think this is simple kind people want to show off. And what is better to show off than such a beautiful life? Now, what's the matter with long legs? Should they be used or not? Yes, of course. They should be used in about 10% of all situations. In 90%, a normal length is much better. I'm taking this example to show you why normal length is better. There is some kind of natural perspective for human eyes. Human eyes see objects going smaller and smaller and see just three dimensions. But when you take a long length is flattening all perspective. So any man who can look and who has some experience with perspective will tell at once, this is a falsified perspective. Only fighters can say this picture is beautiful. This is true for very many long lenses. Of course, I told you that 10%, in 10% long lenses are more. But no more than that. Again, there is such things like resolution. Some prefer to speak about definition, meaning ability to give a very small light accurately on photographic film and paper. There is something about sharpness, about light and so on. Now, if you buy a simple lens, normal lens for $40, and you buy telelens for $400, lens for $40 will have better lenses. And this is it. There are some other things. Your camera is not very strong. You try to put this long lens and go into mountains. Your camera will go very slightly out of order. Maybe as much as 1/10 of a millimeter. But 1/10 of a millimeter is quite enough to make your picture and film very slightly and fast. But if you want a very good picture, well, you better stick to normal lenses.
say, what I recommend for beginning for that life is don't think about life and don't think about long life. Get yourself a simple, very strong camera, which be completely satisfactory for at least 3/4 of your picture. And let other people go with time. What you need really is a strong camera body, a good lens, normal lens, and a good viewer. You have to see what you are taking picture of. In fact, some of very, very best camera has in past very lousy viewers. Leica for many years was the best precision camera in qualified living market. It took Leica makers 20 years to get a good viewer for this camera. Through those 20 years people had to guess. They did not see anything except some little trees in very little viewer, that's all, instead of viewers. Now situation is much better, but still not very good either. It could be much better. Anyway, when you have those three things, good camera body, good lens, good viewer, this is all what you need for 3/4 of your picture. And you can get them for as few as $100. So much for equipment. Of course, many people did ask me, do you develop your own film? You can ask Pfizer, do you really use your brush on your paper? You have to develop, because nobody else will develop them in your station. You have to develop film, you have to make prints, you have to develop your film. Otherwise you are not a photographer, as simple as that. And all the equipment for your darkroom, you can get for as much as, let's say, $90 to $120. Now, if you go to any photography school, they would recommend to you an equipment which is worth at least $1,000. Why? Because photography in many countries is completely commercially oriented. You are supposed to buy more and more things. You are supposed to give thousands and thousands of dollars to somebody else. If you buy a camera, you can be sure that your salesman gets around 40% of what you pay for camera. I have Canon camera with very nice lectures, belts and collars. Which means camera is made completely in Japan. It comes here, some people will check it, put the beautiful name, and then they will charge me about $80 more for this thing. Just for those lines. So you know, remember, in photography, you are considered to be easy money. Somebody who has too much money and somebody who should give this money to you and the self. So you better keep looking around what you do, what you buy. Many people recommend stainless steel for everything. That's very fine, only you pay for stainless steel about 4 times more than for plastic. And if you drop once a stainless steel wheel on a stone, you will need about 2 full days to try to make it work again. Of course, there are some people going for bigger things, like Applejack. Wow. It may be that some people do this beautiful pictures with Applejack. This is true. But when I see somebody going with a Applejack, a long lens, and a short lens, a couple of filters, which makes together about 20 pounds around his neck. Wow, there is something not supposed to be in this area either. Of course, a professional must do it, but nobody can see to this. I think so much for equipment. Now we are going farther and deeper out. Suppose you are already past your first difficulty with potential. You want to farther out. What you should do? First thing is this. Remember, you are not seeing reality around you through your own eyes only. Behind you there is 3,000 years old tradition of seeing this. And you see as you are told to see. I give you an example. You have a picture of a long street, and in the middle of the street stands a very high-rise skyscraper. Now, on the picture, you will see that both sides of the street will come closer and closer to each other, because this is perfect. But somehow the line on the skyscraper will not come closer and closer, they will destroy. Now why? Because for the last 2,000 years, painters did it all. This is a pure convention. There is nothing true about it. When you look at high buildings, lines will go like that, closer and closer. But you don't see that on any picture. Of course, you will have at once another question. Could it be possible then that our lenses don't see reality? That our lenses lie? Well, yes. Photographic lenses are made to lie. So they can be called improved lenses. They don't show reality. They show our convention. So you have to learn what is true, what is conventional. There is another example I will give you. Suppose you see a girl with a very white face in a white dress under a tree with fresh green leaves. Those green leaves are a very good, very efficient filter. And they will get through only green light of light, nothing else. The, of course, both the rest of the girl and her face must be green, no other color. But try just to make a picture of your color film of a man or a girl whose face is green. Just try this. You shall see the reaction of the people. About 8 years ago, it was possible for the first time to produce a film which gives colors exactly as they are. Kodak, Eastman Kodak, tried it. Nobody wanted to buy it, because they are so used to the false colors that true colors look for us somehow wrong. This is one of the reasons why I personally dislike color pictures. Of course, you may use color creatively, but to know that, you have studied books of history of art. To speak quite short about that, what I'm telling you is learn, baby, learn. It's good for young and for young old alike. There is another kind of tradition, and this is pure photographic tradition. I'm very amazed when I see that photographer, a very good one, completely ignored that some of photographers before him were quite good. One of the first couple of photographers were Hill and Davidson. And in opinion of many experts, they did some of the best work in all the photographs. And they did live about 130 years ago. In the end of 19th century, they were again some of the best photographers, like French photographer Nadal, N-A-D-A-L. Nobody knows it. If you want to know something of photography, you have to study. You have to see old photographs. You have to be in the big screen which is slowly, slowly moving from past to the future. You are not on your own. You have your past. You have your future. You have to look both ways. Now I will get to another point. Photography and as such has many unpredictable factors, completely unpredictable. Let's get back to lenses. When you buy a lens and it costs you a couple of $100, for what you are paying? You are not really paying for this lens. You are paying because a good manufacturer of lenses throws out every 9 of them. And only each 10th lens is to be sold. Why? Because there is no known technique of manufacturing lenses which will give satisfactory results each time. So you have to go by trial and error. I give you another example. There is a Eastman Kodak Panasonic film. A few years ago, 2 or 3, Kodak changed sensitivity of the film from 40 ASA. Now it's really USA, they changed from 40 USA to 30 USA. Now, why do they do it? It seems that they put out a new batch of film. And as hard as they tried, they could not make it as sensitive as former batch. Our splendid technology simply is not good enough for a photographic process. Besides, we don't know exactly what happens to the film, what happens to the paper. We just suppose. We have some theories about that. And we change them every few years. Then again, this unpredictability goes further up. If you take a picture, it's in one kind of lighting. You may be sure that some kind of it will never be repeated again in all your life. You see sometimes a special effect of light. You may never in your life see this effect again. So be ready if you have many mistakes. As everybody does. Don't be too much disturbed by them. Just remember always this unpredictability. And now we're coming to something else. Third point of amazement. As soon as somebody comes here to call them, looks at the mountains, takes his camera off, and just takes a picture of those beautiful mountains. No doubt, they are beautiful. But the naked truth is, with a 35 mm camera, you can't make a first-class picture of mountains. In all the world, they leave maybe 5 or 10 men who can do it. No more. No more than that. If you are satisfied with the low-quality pictures, of course, by any means. Now, why mountains cannot be made in a first-class picture? When you see a black and white picture, a difference between the darkest black and the whitest white is about 1 to 60, meaning that darkest places are 60 times more dark than the whitest ones. When you look at the mountains, an average contrast is 1 to 1,000. Though, of course, you can put on your picture only little part of what you see. Your eye is so much better than your camera and your paper that you will not get satisfactory results. There is another subject very popular, flowers. Everybody likes color flowers. And there is a big but. Namely, in our Western tradition, there is always a tendency to put anything in three dimensions, to make any picture look as it would be seen in three dimensions. Depth of picture is important for us. Most of the flowers are very hard to be photographed that way. Rose, yes. Chrysanthemum, yes. Iris, yes. But of those field flowers, practically none is a good photographic subject. You can get some color, but you will not get the three-dimensional quality. I will give you another subject, which is so popular here. You see, let's say, a man and a woman speaking. Some of us speak with hands all the time. And you just come to them and push the book. You are taking so-called candy. Candy speech. And again, the sad truth is to get just second-class candy picture, you have to make about 5 or 7 thousand of themselves. If you cannot make a picture of a man sitting, how you think you can picture of the same man moving? You just better put first things first. But there is a kind, I would say, well, it's hard to say, a perversity of human mind. But somehow everybody looks for the subject which is least likely to succeed. He is looking in the worst place, so he somehow will get only bad things. Now, what is the most natural, beautiful subject for any photographer? Of course, human body. I never saw here a first-class picture of a human face or hands or the rest. Simply, nobody is very much interested in that. And I'm asking myself, what? What? Why it should be so? If you would ask the greatest artists of the past, most of them would tell you, in all the universe, there is nothing more beautiful than human body. My own opinion is different, but I'm just telling what the experts say. I suppose there is some difficulty with old American tendencies to being Puritan. You simply, well, in old times there was something dirty about bodies, which better stay away from.
And in last 20 years or so, this attitude completely flipped, and now we are living in a playboy world, when body is a commercial utility. As it happens, I know most of the playboy tricks. How you put the angle of your camera, how you put the water in an old body of your model, and so on. But you know, to do things like those, well, I must say it reminds me somehow of the so-called oldest profession in the world. Somebody sells you stuff. And I suppose we better find a true middle of the road between puritanic and playboy activity. Again, I'm repeating the second time. Learn, baby, learn. In our tradition, there is plenty of people who wrote about human body. I will just mention a few of them. There was English painter with name of Hogarth, H-O-G-A-R-T-H. And he maintained that the most beautiful line in the whole universe is the line of female body going from the nape of the neck until, well, until the place where she sits down. It looks about like a double S. And this line was always used in last 3,000 years by most of the painters. You have to know this line, and once you put it on the paper, you will see how beautiful it is. Then again, if you look at somebody, most often you look at his eyes, then at his or her lips. This is largely not in it. There is a Greek legend about Adonis and goddess of beauty, Aphrodite. And there is a small mention in this legend that there was a part of body of Aphrodite which Adonis considered the most beautiful of all. And you will be surprised what part it is. If any of you will put your hand here, below your neck, you will find two little bones. And the space between bones was considered by Greeks, by many of them, the most beautiful of all human bodies. Well, in my case, there is some other surplus of fat I cannot see at all. But look at Sharon here or somebody else, and you will see how finally shadow and light are playing on this place. Other cultures did things differently. In Japan, they were simply crazy about line of neck. And they cut kimonos for women in this way that line of neck was always visible. And if you see a Japanese picture where this line of neck is very clear, it means she is tempting somebody. And so on and on. If somebody wants to begin photography, I would to advise you to try human body first, and all the else later. You will find the three dimensions. You will find beautiful form, beautiful color. In fact, I met in Poland a photographer who for 3 years took only pictures of her, of his wife. He got first prize in Switzerland, and then a big American magazine
buy those pictures for him.
So he did practically live from one series of pictures for quite a few years.
They were beautiful, no doubt.
Of course, I'm not telling you you have to go overboard. There is a German photographer, his name is Fritz Hemmler, H-E-M-L-E. And I saw one, a photograph of him. It was titled A Torso. Now, a torso should mean a part of body between your head and your leg. But I saw something quite different. It was a rear end full of goose flesh and pimples, you know, so he was really going a bit overboard. You don't have to go as far as that. If you just go around the hall, you will see some faces such beautiful, some others so gentle, some others so full of wisdom, that really I can understand why in past some people get adoration to human body. Because the beauty of it is so high that if you just open your eyes, you will see. And if you can, learn, baby, learn. Go to book. Now there is another thing. I am speaking all the time about three dimensions. Reality of making things looking alive. This is specialty of our civilization for a long, long time. There is a Greek story about two painters. Name of one was Zeuxis, another was named Parrhasios. Now, Zeuxis did paint some fruits, a boy with fruits, and those fruits were so lifelike that the birds came to them to peck them, because birds considered them to be alive. When another painter saw them, he told himself, I will do something still better. And he did paint a simple curtain. And before his painting, he put five other curtains. And he asked another painter to come. Well, Zeuxis came to him and wanted to see painter of Parrhasios. He opened the first curtain, the second one, the third one. When he came after five, he wanted to open the last one, and his fingers did feel cold touch of linen, because it was a pain. So you don't go easy from tradition like that. Other civilizations have completely different traditions. In Japan, in China, there is tradition of shadowless painting. Suppose a diffused light is coming from every side, so there are no shadows whatever. In our civilization, there were some painters who tried that. The most important of them would be Italian painter Botticelli. He did it very fine. But of course, this is basically a strange tradition, and you would do bad beginning at it. There is some kind of American specialty. There is one thing which in this country gets being photographed over and over and over. For some reason, American photographers just love dead trees. You can see dead trees everywhere. At first they look beautiful. Once you see about 1,000 of dead trees, you feel somehow uncomfortable. So I would advise you not go to that place, just try something else. Well, I suppose I'm close to end to those remarks. And I will finish with another advice. There is no such thing as instant beauty, instant wisdom, and you can't learn photography in 5 easy lessons. If you go and dig and dig and dig, if you learn, if you try, if you read the book, if you put lots of your sweat, and, well, tears sometimes, then you will be a really good photographer. That's about all. Now, if somebody has some questions, I will be glad to answer. If somebody will try to criticize, he is invited to do it too.
I have a question. When you buy like an internet camera and so you pay $40 for it and there's an internet for $125, what is the difference in that? And they look alike.
Well, specifically in case of Instamatic, it is much more beautiful, you know. This one for $100, much more beautiful. It's just a bit better, not much. In opinion of some experts, this is not enough.
Is the lens the same as the...
No, lens is a bit different. Now, it depends what kind of picture you want to do. If you want to use to flash pictures, believe me, for flash pictures, practically any lens is as good as any other, an Instamatic. So, if I were you, I would not buy this one for $100. Of course, if you have money, well.
I'd like to ask you a question about philosophy and photography. I think there was an argument a few years ago which led eventually to a decision in the U.S. Supreme Court, and it's known usually as the Great Sandpaper Shave case. I'm sure that many of you will remember the television commercial that we used to see of the shaving cream that would be sprayed on sandpaper, and then they would pull the razor over, and the point was that this was so good that it would make it possible to shave sandpaper. Excuse me, just one moment. What was photographed in the laboratory was plexiglass sheet, or a sheet of some kind of material with plexiglass beads on it, and the substance that was sprayed on the sheet was not really shaving cream. However, this product would in fact work on sandpaper. There was no misrepresentation in the verbal text. The shaving cream would indeed do exactly what they said it would, but the thing that the camera was photographing was something else. And the question was here, and you were mentioning this, what is reality? The United States Supreme Court said that you could not do this. You could not. They made them take this ad off the air because they said you must show reality. You must show what is really there. Now, sandpaper and real shaving cream would not look as much to the television viewer like sandpaper and shaving cream as the thing that they were photographing. You know, sometimes the product looks better and sometimes it looks worse. This looked more like the product to the viewer than the product would look like. Now, to a photographer, what is reality?
Now, Vern, you are putting me in a very uncomfortable situation.
I'm not sure.
If you see sometimes a bear in zoo, you're stepping from one feet to another. It's just me right now. Because basically, professional photography must use some unreal tricks. Suppose you are making picture of a beautiful model in a beautiful new shirt. Well, it seems that you have to change this shirt every 20 minutes and press and take back. Because if you do this, if your model stands for you for longer than 20 minutes, then shirt will not look as nice in the hot light. So then again, if you see sometimes a beautiful felt model here, completely thin, remember she has behind her about 15 pounds of iron hanging and pushing her bones behind, you know, this way, 15 pounds, as more as that. Then again, if you see some beautiful barbecue or some meat in tomato sauce, it seems there is no better, photographically speaking, sauce than some kind of paint with brick powder mixed in it. So there is absolutely nothing to eat in what you see, you know. There is no meat whatever. And this is just a big problem. How far can you go? How far? Because you can change such things like expression of self. There was a great photographer, he was not very gentle with people, and he asked men, do you want to look intelligent or full of energy? Now, what's the difference? For intelligence, you put your camera on the head of somebody's eyes, and those big eyes, and of course, all skin around them, somehow make him intelligent. If you want him to make full of energy, you lower your camera so you see this big manly chin, like Napoleon or Mussolini had. Then he's full of energy. There was another photographer asking his model, do you want to look beautiful or do you want to be like you are? He thought, as simple as that. And most women said, I want to look beautiful. Now, how you do that? This is another question. Why each woman thinks about herself as being more beautiful than she really is? And this is not just. Answer is very light. How you see yourself? Of course, in a looking glass, in a mirror. Now, mirror itself has a softening quality. You don't see exactly what you are, you see a softer self. And then, light over mirror is not the light you will meet in your real life. Light is much more softened, so all the face looks much better. In fact, when I'm taking pictures with my camera, and I see some sharp faces, I prefer to take the pictures of the mirror, you know. It looks much better. So now, this is of course perfectly legal, I suppose. But when you begin to put all kinds of colored creams on them, you can put something in eyes to make them bigger and more colored. In fact, some poor models had to be really hard put to work. Sometimes muscles of a hand are not strong enough to support themselves. So photographer will put something behind your body which you will not see. But believe me, some models are so built around by all kinds of construction that what you see in, let's say, some 17 or what, this is not real life at all. But I'm just not competent enough to say what is the legal side of
it. No, I just wondered how a photographer feels. Does he think that he is representing reality when he doctors the subject so that it comes out looking like somebody's idea of what it ought to be?
A professional photographer wants money. And anything which gets him some money is good.
have a problem I don't understand, Dr. Hardy. If I want to take a picture of fruit from here, I know from experience that I will not get a good picture. Because I sit here and look at Bruce, and Bruce is all I see. But when I take the picture, I will have Bruce and everybody in the background, and I'll have all the
right
other distractions. So I understand that. If I want to take a picture of the mountains, I find I can't get enough. I can get a snapshot of that part of it. And when I look at the mountain, that is really all I see when I look at that part of the mountain. When I look at the whole mountain, when I hit around, I see the whole mountain. Now, what's going on here? Wow. One place, I can't see enough, and another place, I see too much.
I will try to put it as short as I can, because this is a matter of anatomy and physiology. When we see, there are three very distinct spheres of vision. First of all, you see before you a very little, let's say, subject. And you see it very sharp. Now, there is another bigger circle around it, and you see it on the half than the middle one. And then you have so-called peripheral vision. I'm looking here, but if you move now, I will see your movement, So our vision is not of one side, it's of three different sides. When you're looking at the mountain, you concentrate on one part, and you simply don't see as well on other parts. So you are taking pictures, but your lens see all of them exactly in the same way. So your lens is quite different. And it takes for an average photographer about 10 years to learn to see things as his lens sees. Then again, there is a mental selectivity. If you are very much interested in Bruce face, you will not be able to see anything around him because you are so much concentrated on him. But your camera, your lens, does not see. For your lens is completely indifferent if this is Bruce or maybe piece of wood. Now, if you want to take good pictures, first thing, look behind your subject. This is first thing every good photographer does. Look behind your subject. Make everything behind him plain. No play of shadow and light, just play. Try to push away from him anything which is disturbing, any branches, any extra rays of light. Just leave him himself. But this is just the most difficult problem for our beginning. Most difficult.
Will you comment on what elements you carry photography and think of?
Karsh?
Yeah.
Well, I never had so good questions as I have now. Because those questions were exactly in my mind. Now, why makes Karsh a great photographer? Now, I will explain to you what Karsh does. He sits down with some very great or very rich man, and he sits with him for full day. You mean Yusuf Karsh from Ottawa? Well, he sits with him for full day, and he has a kind of push button under his feet, and he pushes this button about 300 times in the time of this day. And then he throws 299 pictures away and leaves just one. You remember what I told you about unpredictability. This is just the way Carl sees. He tries to catch as many moves, as many differences as he can. And then he gets the best. And believe me, he charges for it. Then again, there is another quality. He works with a big camera, with very good definition. And you can see each line in face of his subject. And he is a very able photographer, really. And this is another important point. You cannot go into many directions of photography and make something really good. Karsh makes only one kind of portrait. There could be 50 different kinds. He is sticking at this one kind. He used mainly three lights, sometimes four, electronic flash. They are going as fast as 1,000th of a second. So everything is wrong. And I would say, those faces look like some of faces in late Middle Ages, when painters wanted to put the atmosphere. I personally like him, but I would not consider him the greatest photographer on this continent. Name of the greatest photographer here in the United States, who was possibly the greatest artist of America, is, well, I don't have any head, so I cannot take it off. His name is Edward Weston. Edward Weston was a kind of hippie before his time. He went just around America, Mexico, and such. But his pictures, he did work as hard as he could. And he came to a conviction that they are only very few forms of life which go repeating themselves. He took a picture of a fruit of pepper. Another picture, fruit of pear. And then he took a picture of a woman sitting, and a nude act, sitting like that with head this way. And he took the picture from behind. Form of the body of this woman is practically the same as form of the pear. There is no difference. So he did prove in his pictures what he wanted to do. And if you want to see a true, honest-to-God photography, there is nothing better like Edward Weston. You have to go from here only 50 feet to find his work in Meditation Library. I'm sorry I went from Carl to Weston, but Weston is...
I'll go to the photographic show, and I don't remember the photographer and the artist. But I remember when he described what he was doing, he said that what he was doing, shoot the picture of a person just as he was moving from one point to the point of being aware that he was taking his picture. In other words, catching the person. And these were all political people like the president of the United States, etc. And you get them just as they were coming into their awareness that you were hitting them and just catching those points. And I just wanted.
Well, yes, there is some difficulty about that.
Yeah.
Namely, in terms of time. Suppose somebody is looking this way, and you are standing on side. You want to take this picture. Now, just look at your watch. How much time it takes? This is about 3/4 of a second. Well, my neck is a bit shorter, so maybe it takes longer. But I myself, I need about 1/4 of a second time to get somebody. And It takes quite an experience to get to this point. But it is a bit dangerous. Now, why it is that? Most of men and women, not children, men and women, have a set of different expressions. One for angry, anger, another for love, another for happiness. Maybe 7, maybe 10, maybe 12. And each of them is well known, both to him or her, and to all the others. But it does not tell the truth about her. If you catch a person in the time when he or she changes expression from one to another, you will have a picture of person which nobody knows, because nobody ever sees. And this is so extremely dangerous that some of my pictures done like that I never show to anybody, because this man or woman would be completely, you know, kicked by people. Yeah. Yeah. You don't see that.
And for the whole gallery, isn't it true that the average amateur photographer has worked a little too fast in 50 pictures?
In this country, yes. Yes. Yes, because if you go to Germany, well, they take hours and hours to do something.
They're always getting after me. I'm taking too long.
You are perfectly right. Take just twice as time as you're doing, as you say them, they are tigers, you know. Of course, you will not get anything candid, you know. But your work will be much better. Here is the photographer whose first name is Bob, and the longer he makes his flight, the better the flight is. You just look at his life, you will
get better composition.
Yes. So if you are strong in composition, you will be better for that. Yes.
But also,
I agree with that.
If you get one salon shot out of 1,000 flies, you will be better.
Of course. Of course. But, you know, I would say that a true photographer is never satisfied. There is always something which could be done to get just a bit better. And a wife is a most helpful being to do that. And she had to have as much patience as she. Yes. I suppose it is going late, 11 o'clock. If somebody else has questions.
I knew that was
Thank you very much. But you know that in the United States, taking pictures in a courtroom in Philadelphia
is just not
perfect.
Very interesting. In addition to that, you told me.